Welcome to Big Ideas in Supply Chain, where we connect with supply chain experts and industry professionals to explore how all the stuff we need ends up in the right place at the right time.
Hi, and welcome to Big Ideas in Supply Chain. I'm your host, Jenny Reese, and I'm joined by two guests today, Rob Stevens and Allison Crawford, and I will let them take the floor and introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about who they are and what they do.
Okay, we'll go in the order you said. I'm Rob Stevens. I'm part of a team of data scientists and analytics professionals here at First Analytics. We're a firm that's focused on advanced predictive modeling and machine learning. We do a lot in supply chain. We do things outside of supply chain, but in supply chain, you know, we've got a variety of industries: CPG, retail, manufacturing, transportation, health and life sciences. So a lot of us on the team have supply chain backgrounds and analytics backgrounds, so we like bringing those things together for these kinds of for these types of applications.
I'm Allison Crawford. I am a senior manager on the industry and solutions marketing team at Kinaxis, and my view is actually taking all the stuff that Rob is doing as part of my purview and pulling it together and trying to understand what's happening in the market and helping supply chain companies in the CPG space make better decisions and move their supply chains ahead profitably and productively. So really looking forward to the conversation today, guys.
Yeah, so what are you both seeing? Rob, we'll start with you on the analytics side. So what are you seeing in terms of global disruption related to COVID or otherwise? What kinds of disruptions and which industries predominantly are you seeing the analytics show you or give you some insight right now?
Well, I'm going to focus a little bit on analytics. It's clear that relying on history for analytics is more challenging than it ever has been before because the history just ain't what it used to be, right? A lot of people who do demand planning rely on historical sales or historical shipments or orders. And when it just completely doesn't reflect the patterns of the past, it's harder to rely on that data. Industry-wise, you know, most CPG companies are up. In fact, one of our clients' brand sales for several brands are up about 45%. But other brands have been suspended, right? Because they just need to make a lot of food for their core brands, and they just can't keep up. So, you know, the plants have been sort of focused just on the core product. So you do see, even within a CPG company, if you're the brand managers, some brands are just out of control trying to meet demand. Some of them are completely shut off. There's not a lot of new product innovation going on. In retail, obviously, you see the news, the brick and mortar sales are down upwards of 90%. But those headlines are actually a bit deceiving because most of these retailers do have online channels, and while they haven't picked up a lot of the slack, they certainly have, in the words of one of my clients said, it's kept us alive, the online channel. So you see the distribution across channels shifting, not only just products, but also channels.
What I understand, some of those stats on retail sales also include oil and gas, is that right?
It could, you know, that's, you know, we're an analytics company, so we're always doubtful and skeptical of any data that comes across. And there's always more to the story. I can put together any story I want for any news article based on how I spin the data. So you really do have to be more disciplined in how you look at the data and, you know, look at the interpretation of what you're seeing.
Right. I think what's going to happen is we're going to have to look at particularly Q2 of 2020 with an asterisk on everything in terms of demand, and then use that when the next big crisis hits to kind of predict how things are going to go and maybe get ahead of things a little bit easier. Because I know that with this pandemic hitting, particularly, there's been a lot of disruption in supply chain across lots of different products, and companies have been struggling to keep up, you know, and I think that this is I don't want to say it's a great test case, but in some ways it has been, because I don't think that we've had a global disruption. There's been, you know, individual ones with, you know, tsunamis and hurricanes and, you know, geopolitical things going on. But this is really kind of the first big one that we faced, you know, together as a planet, that really has kind of, you know, highlighted, you know, some of the things that we should and should not do for the next time this kind of happens.
Yeah, that's right. And I think a little bit later here, we're going to talk about how do we plan for the next time this happens, but we'll save that conversation for a few minutes from now.
Absolutely.
Got to keep them on the hook, Rob.
Yeah, that's right.
So I want to circle back. You mentioned, you know, the food industry and to the meat industry specifically. And, you know, I've been reading a bit about, you know, the meat industry supply chains, both globally and in the U.S. And it sounds like the issue is not necessarily a supply and demand, but a labor issue. Would you agree with that?
Yes, it can be early on. So we have clients in the railroad and the meatpacking industry. And we've got a little COVID model that we run every day at the county level, and we provide them sort of the risk profile of their work locations. And early on, there was concern that, you know, running a train is an essential service. You know, how do we make sure we can have crews to man those trains? And, you know, so yeah, labor is an issue. Also within CPG, the sales force or the account executives that call on locations, you know, their companies don't want to put them at risk. And so another analytical application we have is by sales rep. If this person, if she's going to call on, you know, Kroger, we know the Kroger locations that she should probably avoid. So now that is starting to temper out a little bit as we get, well, some parts of the country are getting past that, the riskiest part of it. But yes, it has been sort of on the labor planning side. And in the meat industry specifically, you've all seen the headlines there. It's they've had a hard time, you know, figuring out where to take, you know, their meat for processing. And so the analytics can solve the problem there, too. There's a little app that says we normally ship to this plant in Wichita, Kansas. Now we're going to move it to Grand Island based on what the caseload looks like it's predicting. So they're trying to get ahead of that to their credit in the meat industry and try to be predictive to handle those things. But again, this is all new stuff that nobody's really had to deal with under normal conditions. But fortunately, data, as flawed as it can be, at least provides some informed decisions along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Allison, you did mention that, you know, this, we're sort of all in this one together. What are your thoughts on, you know, like, so the last probably global-ish disruption would have been the financial crisis of 08. There was a lot of crash and burn during that time. So how do you think this compares to that? I mean, I'll throw it out to both of you, but and also, like, what did we learn from that that you think we could apply in this situation?
Rob, do you want to go first? Because I think I definitely have some opinion. But
sure. So one of the things coming out of the financial crisis, and, you know, none of us here on the call really know all that much about how banks and lenders work and their capital requirements. But one of the things that came out of that was there were rules that the Fed established and processes for running what they called stress tests. So in other words, if something, another black swan event, something that's so far outside of the range of normal and with respect to variation were to hit again, let's use data and simulation to see if your capital reserves for this particular institution were sufficient to handle that situation. So let's bring that over to supply chain and demand planning. You know, can we use data from this and also simulated data? And there are all kinds of simulation tools that we can apply this to say, you know, if we have another global event like this or localized event, is our supply chain, all the nodes in that supply chain from consumer to procurement, are they in a situation where we can handle the next shock and do some advanced planning?
Right. You know, and I think, you know, Rob, to your point earlier when you talked about the headlines, you know, the one that I keep thinking about is when Tyson Foods came out and said, you know, was it the Wall Street Journal, you know, our supply chain is breaking, right? Their food supply chain is breaking. And I went and I dug a little bit, and it turns out that really kind of wasn't the case. And to your point, in terms of understanding demand and all the nodes along the supply chain, I think that, you know, like we talked about earlier, the processing and having the labor to do the slaughter and the processing of meat, you know, was definitely impacted. But I think that, you know, in terms of the supply chain, there was a whole lot going on with, you know, cold storage. You know, from what I understand, that, you know, we did not, I think I said, you know, there was 2.5 billion pounds of meat in cold storage that was being shipped, you know, across the country, as well as the exports of meat to other countries here went out, was still going out, you know, to foreign countries like China and the like. So I think that, you know, understanding the analytics kind of, you know, even at the node level is super important, because the story has been changing around what's happening with supply chain so rapidly. And I think that, you know, from the financial crisis, I think there was a lot of fear in terms of being able to buy the end goods. I think with this, the fear was around providing the goods so people could buy them, right? Because I think there's a lot of other factors at play that we really need to consider in terms of supply chain health. That's my perspective.
Exactly. A lot of this isn't broken, it's reconfigured. They had to reconfigure. I know that a lot of CPG companies normally wouldn't have serviced certain customers out of a particular distribution center, but had to make accommodations for that. So reconfiguration and redundancy. I don't know if you saw the news earlier this week, but T-Mobile went down, and I read this morning that they had poor redundancy in their networks, and so they're looking to how they can sort of, I mean, I know this isn't a supply chain issue, but the analog fits, you know, what's the backup plan and the backup plan of the backup plan, right?
So. Right. Well, I think that kind of gets into the whole idea of safety stock, right? And that's part of supply chain planning. Now, how do you kind of keep enough in a safety stock to be able to meet at least short-term demand without holding so much that you're raising your costs? And how do you, you know, configure the network to be able to do that?
Yeah, or ending up with a bunch of obsolete or spoiled or wasted inventory.
Exactly. And there's a very fine line, you know, particularly when things go haywire like they have, to be able to understand what that plan looks for, like, and, you know, to what we were talking about earlier, you know, now that we understand what could go wrong, how do you plan accurately and keep things moving along to keep it from happening and being impacted this much again?
Yeah, I think it's important too to point out that this disruption, you know, the financial crisis disrupted huge corporations, you know, who eventually got bailouts, of course. But in this case, not only global, you know, brands and supply chains have been affected, but also very small and localized supply chains as well. Even if that's just, you know, an issue of labor being able to produce, transport, deliver, you know, goods and services. So I guess I want to talk more about the technical aspect of how even, you know, businesses of all sizes, so, you know, small companies, mid-sized companies, and enterprises can all sort of play in the same technology to be able to analyze and scenario plan for disruption.
Well, one of the interesting things that came up when I was trying to get educated on this topic was the concept of sustainability. And I saw that particularly in meat processing, a lot of these smaller farms were saying, you know what, even though things are going crazy, you know, all these other big plants are talking about, you know, they're going to have to slaughter all these cattle because there's nowhere for them to, you know, basically feed them and keep them watered to keep them alive, to be able to meet the demand when it comes back on from the processing. And these smaller farmers are saying, you know what, we can weather this just fine, right? And I think that from a technology perspective, I think one of the things that we have to figure out is, you know, how do we make this sustainable as well as, you know, pull in the right materials to keep the supply chain going. I think that's also something that we should delve into a little bit.
Yeah, this is a perfect opportunity. And rather than be negative and worry about how bad this has been for supply chain, we should look at this as a positive opportunity to re-examine the way we do this and not let it go to waste. In fact, I think there's a quote, never let a good crisis go to waste, right?
Right.
So this is the opportunity to sort of say, hey, what do we learn from this? I think we're 3-4 months into this now, and maybe the dark cloud and the dourness of it all and the reaction is past us. And this is the time now to really start looking at how do we reconfigure supply chain to be more localized and more sustainable.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of, what is it, the 5 stages of grief? You kind of go through the, you know, denial and then the acceptance, and then you kind of work to the next thing, right? I think that this almost is very similar, that, you know, we were all in shock when the pandemic hit and we didn't know what to do. And then we were scrambling to kind of figure out, you know, what to do next. And like you said, I think this is a great opportunity for us to, you know, look at what went well and what was working, kind of figure out where the problems were, and honestly move supply chain as a whole kind of forward to the next step, because it's become so important that, you know, small vendors as well as large are understanding that, you know, the technology and the sustainability piece and understanding demand in these different things, it's all coming together. So I agree with you, Rob. I think this is a huge learning opportunity, and I honestly think we're going to come out stronger for it, you know, 6-12 months from now.
You know, this has been obviously a wake-up call for anyone working in supply chain or anyone who has a supply chain, which is, you know, everyone in CPG. So, you know, now that we're in the acceptance phase of this and we're going to, you know, presumably have this supply chain renaissance, what do you recommend that companies do to sort of get started? I mean, digital transformation sounds kind of overwhelming, and you know, obviously big data is one of the big keys here. I'm sure you'll agree, Rob. but how do companies get started?
You're right, Jenny. Big data, I'm going to come in with my particular view and glasses on here because we are a big data. I hate that phrase, but it's so 2006.
I wasn't born then, so I didn't know.
But, you know, a data analytics perspective is the way to go. We are actually pretty surprised at how well, so a lot of our clients use statistical forecasting as a basis to do demand planning. They're still humans in the loop, right? But they base their forecasts off of a statistical forecast. We've actually been surprised at how well some of them are holding up. But as I talk to our clients, they kind of feel like we're still in, at least in CPG, for another 2, 3, 4 months of non-normal before we can rely on the current or what used to be the current process. So what we've done is we've started work where we profile different segments of the business, how the SKUs group, how the products group, how the customers group. And, you know, there's kind of 3 or 4 clear buckets. Number one, it's business as usual. We can continue to rely on statistical forecasting. Number two is they're still valid, these statistical forecasts, but we need to augment them with things like data on the pandemic itself or economic causal data. There's a smaller group where we think some more advanced techniques like machine learning can help. And then there's a fortunately fairly small group. We were a little bit surprised at this, but that there's need for more human judgment, that just data isn't going to help you. So you just sort of need to use, there's something kind of known as the Delphi method, where it's sort of a consensus of peer, it's a disciplined way of coming up with peer forecasts. So you notice that all those talk about data and models. And so what I'm getting at is to really adapt to the way things are going to be in the future, we really need to rely on analytics and data in the future.
I think that for companies to get started, we need to go one step further up, right? And the way I look at it, it's kind of like when you start a gym routine, right? You think, I'm going to go out and I'm going to run 5 miles today, first day out of the gate, right? Like, we all know that's never going to happen. And so I think for a lot of companies, it's got to be similar to, you start with a 15-minute workout, right? You're going to be sore as all get out 2 days later, but it's progress. And I think that a lot of companies to get started on this path, to be able to harness the usefulness of all these analytics, they really need to figure out communication. I think there's a lot of organizations that are still kind of on the lower end of the maturity scale from a supply chain perspective that haven't figured out the alignment between a lot of their internal lines of business that need to have this information getting shifted back and forth. Because you could have the best analytics in the world, but if they're not making it across all the silos, it's no good, right? Yeah. So looking at communication first, that kind of, you know, first pass on, you know, where are we breaking down passing this data across the business? That's the first step. And then once you figure out how to communicate, then that analytical power really comes into play.
Yeah, you guys really just did my job for me there. So I can bow out now. Thank you for the bow tied on that ending. I think you're both right. You know, as Rob said, it's about the art and the science. It can't be all human and it can't be all data. And Allison, as you said, it's progress, not perfection. So I think it's those baby steps toward transformation. So
not being afraid to get started. I think that's the other thing, right? I'm going to do it tomorrow.
Now that I can compare to a gym routine.
Yes. I'm going to start my diet tomorrow.
Right. Me too. Every tomorrow for the rest of my life.
Right.
All right, guys. Any final thoughts before we close up shop here today?
Well, I realize this is probably not a very interesting podcast for vegans and vegetarians, but I hope that they take away the crux of the meaning about.
Well, you know. I mean, once you say slaughter, it's pretty much over for them.
It's over. Yeah.
We broke that seal. So, yeah. Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show today, and we hope to have you back soon.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Jenny.